And now the opinion page. Thank you and goodbye, the words on the final front page of the most widely read newspaper in the English language. Britain's Sunday tabloid News of the World died yesterday after 168 years, a victim of self-inflicted wounds. A slow-developing scandal finally reached critical mass last week, and James Murdoch, the son of News Corporation chairman Rupert Murdoch, shut the newspaper down. It turns out that people hired by the paper hacked into the cell phones of celebrities, newsmakers, a young murder victim, and British soldiers killed in Afghanistan. But how far is too far for an exclusive? In a piece on the op-ed page of the Washington Post, Howard Kurtz argues that American news outlets are not immune to tabloid tactics. We want to hear from those of you who read the tabloid press. What keeps you interested? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Howard Kurtz joins us now on the phone. He's the Washington Bureau Chief of Newsweek and the Daily Beast. You can read his opinion piece on our website. Howard Kurtz, nice to have you on the program again.
Thanks very much, Neil.
And you wrote, the illegal phone hacking is just an extreme example of a news business that increasingly pushes the ethical envelope. How so?
Well, I just detect a lot of clucking among Americans about those crazy Brits and the things that they do with the tabloids in London. And by the way, your listeners probably know this scandal just got a whole lot worse with the revelation that another Murdoch tabloid in London, The Sun, apparently accessed medical records, legal records, and other confidential information from former Prime Minister Gordon Brown. So this is now more than just a News of the World story. But, you know, having covered the media beat for many years, you know, I have seen all kinds of unethical and questionable behavior by American outlets. And even in the phone hacking area, News of the World was not the first to get there. The Cincinnati Inquirer, as I write, had to pay $10 million and publish a front-page apology to Chiquita after illegally and improperly accessing some voicemail messages from that company.
That was some years ago when $10 million was still $10
million. That's right. It was a lot of money in 1998.
And as you point out, well, for example, the John Edwards case was made public prominently by the National Enquirer, one of our own domestic scandal sheets, which paid for its sources, but nevertheless broke a huge story.
Yeah, that's probably an example of, you know, good reporting by a tabloid, although personally I am not in favor of and don't think that mainstream organizations should pay sources of information in doing reporting. You know, everything that the Inquirer reported about John Edwards, which he denied the affair, he denied that the child was his, all turned out to be right, as we now know. But, you know, this paying for information is not just the province, the exclusive province of the National Enquirers of the world. The television networks all do the same thing. Now, of course, they will deny it. Neil, they will say, no, we never pay for information. We pay for photos. We pay for videos. That's why you had ABC paying $200,000 to Casey Anthony a couple years back, about a month before she was indicted for the murder of her daughter. Of course, she was acquitted last week in that very controversial verdict. But, you know, it's basically just a way around the prohibition by saying we're not paying the source potentially for an interview. We are buying photos.
And this can blow up in people's faces, too, as you pointed out in the piece. A large payment offered to a woman who was injecting her child with Botox until the story turned out to be a hoax.
Yes, but only after she went on Good Morning America and told a pretty large American audience about this alleged Botox Botoxing of her young daughter.
I had not heard that used as a verb before.
Well, there's always a first.
There's always a first time. The competition for the juicy story, is this a byproduct of, well, one media outlet wants to get ahead of the other? If you're TMZ, you want to beat everybody else? Or is this something that we should all bear some responsibility for?
Well, you know, there's always been competition going back to the early days of newspapers, so I don't think that lets any of us in the news business off the hook. And I do think the public plays a role here. And one of the points I tried to make in this Washington Post piece, Neil, is that when News of the World conducted that sting against Sarah Ferguson, where one of the reporters famously impersonated a fake sheikh and there was a hidden camera video, and of course, you know, she was appeared to be selling access to her ex-husband, Prince Andrew. You know, I wrote about it at the time and said this is an outrageous example of lying and deception. Certainly didn't make Fergie look good, but nor did I think it made the News of the World look good. I don't think there were three people in America or even in Britain that particularly cared about the lying and deception involved. It was all, you know, let's have a good laugh at how far Fergie has fallen. I think what made this scandal different and what prompted Murdoch to close News of the World yesterday and has now given rise to all kinds of outrage in Britain and investigations that are going to be a headache for the Murdoch empire for some time to come, is that suddenly it was no longer celebrities or a couple of rich athletes who were having their phones hacked by News of the World, either journalists or private investigators. Suddenly it was ordinary people, ordinary blue-collar readers who had been victims of the 2005 London terror bombing, or whose sons had died in Iraq or Afghanistan, or famously or infamously, I should say, in one case, hacking into the phone of a 13-year-old girl who was missing and later found murdered. That hit some kind of nerve in Britain, whereas before it was just kind of seen as, you know, tabloids going a little over the top. And now I would say it's, you know, there's no, when you have the Prime Minister, David Cameron, giving a speech and addressing his own relationships with people in the Murdoch empire and those of other politicians, there's no other story in Britain right now. It is a huge scandal.
And we want to hear from those of you who read the tabloid press. So what keeps you interested? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. But there are some news aspects to this, Howard Kurtz, that we do need to address. As you say, there had been considerable speculation in Britain that upon closure of News of the World, the other tabloid owned by the Murdoch empire, The Sun, would start publishing a Sunday edition not so very far down the road. Again, that's thrown into question now about these new allegations.
Yeah, you know, it was a kind of a shrewd bit of damage control on Rupert Murdoch's part to close the paper, because it had become such a toxic symbol of corrupt journalism. What better thing to do, other than, unless you happen to be one of the 280 people who work there, than to just make it go away as a brand and then say, you know, you're moving on. But if this scandal now spreads to The Sun and perhaps other parts of the Murdoch empire, that's going to be a significant problem for him, perhaps here in the U.S. as well. And in pointing out that networks pay for, you know, family photos of people in trouble, ABC also bought those some pictures from one of the women who was involved in the texting with the former Congressman Anthony Weiner. And in pointing out some of the plagiarism and fabrication scandals in American media outlets, I'm not trying to say that any of that is in the category of what happened in News of the World. I say News of the World is an extreme example, but it is a slippery slope. And as our culture turns more and more tabloid, and as even once respectable organizations, at least online, now publish all kinds of stuff because it appeared at Radar or TMZ, et cetera, you know, I just think now the culture of American journalism is changing as well, and not necessarily what I would consider a good direction.
And the other aspect of this that may have some significance down the road, the Murdoch effort to finish up buying the remainder, which it did not already have, of the British pay TV broadcaster BSkyB, looked like that was going ahead until last week, and now looks like that's severely on hold.
And I think that is a major part of the motivation for Murdoch deciding to close the tabloid, is that he did, you know, did not want to jeopardize this $12 billion takeover of British Sky Broadcasting, which he wants to make a little bit more like Fox News. And, you know, it already had been controversial, but it was only supposed to be considered strictly on competitive grounds. Would that acquisition put too much influence in the hands of one man and one company in Britain? Now, of course, it's become a huge political football. It's already been slowed down by the British government. It's hard to see that getting the green light from British authorities anytime soon.
If you read the tabloid press, what do you get out of it? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Leighton's on the line, calling us from DeBary in Florida.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead, please.
I got hooked on tabloids back in the late 80s when I lived in London. And I used to go to cocktail parties, and people would mention things about Prince Charles and his unfaithfulness to Lady Diana. I started reading The Sun, also watched other tabloids there. Then when I came back to the States, I began to realize that tabloids were always ahead of the curve. And what would be showing up in the New York Times 3 and 4 years down the road had appeared in my local supermarket about 3 years before. And I started seeing it as sort of a gossipy, but at the same time, in some way factual way of seeing what was going on behind the scenes.
Well, tabloids can be ahead of the curve, but a lot of tabloid stories don't pan out. I mean, look, I enjoy tabloids. They're very entertaining. I lived in New York, and still today I like reading the New York Post, also, of course, owned by Rupert Murdoch. But the New York Post a couple weeks ago, just to take one example, ran an incredibly thinly sourced story in the DSK case, the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case, accusing the maid, the accuser, who news organizations have not named, of being a hooker on the side.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that's true. If that turns out to be true and ends up in the New York Times, then your point will be proven. But I don't think that the New York Post proved that story. So yes, great titillation, great gossip, sometimes ahead of mainstream news organizations, but sometimes the stories simply don't pan out.
We may find out if it's true in the libel trial, charges brought. But I'm sorry, Leighton, you were going to say?
Well, no, I just think the classic story for me was that Prince Charles was doing everything to undermine Princess Diana, and you would go and talk to people that were sort of in their circles, and you would find out little things, and then it would turn up in the tabloids, but you never heard that in the mainstream press. I don't think the Daily Telegraph or the Sunday Times ever mentioned anything until the deed was already done.
The Sunday Times also, as it happens, owned by Rupert Murdoch, but
indeed.
A very different kind of newspaper. Leighton, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking with Howard Kurtz, who is, among other things, the host of CNN's Reliable Sources, about his piece that ran in the op-ed page of his former newspaper, The Washington Post. He's the Washington Bureau Chief of Newsweek and The Daily Beast. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to, this is Jay, and Jay's on the line from San Francisco.
Hi. I'm actually a reader of The Sun and the News of the World, and I read primarily for the sports coverage, especially for English Premier League and for the cricket. There's only those papers like the Red Tops, including the Mirror and the Star, that really cover sports really well in the UK. So is News of the World a loss? No, it'll get replaced by The Sun on Sunday or The Sunday Sun in a couple of months' time, and everyone will move on.
But you read them online now?
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing. I mean, their character is no different online than it is in print?
I haven't had the print copy since living in the U.S. for 13 years. So, I read them online.
A little hard to compare. But for the sports coverage, and I have to say I'm a fan of the New York, a lot of New York area professional sports teams. And I read the New York Post and the Daily News for the same reason.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know what's going on for your sports coverage, it's either for the UK or even for the European sports. You really have to read British newspaper or the BBC website or watch Fox Soccer Network, which is also owned by Murdoch. But in my view, there's more going on behind this than just the scandal with the newspapers. It really is about future media, and I think this is what Murdoch is looking at, and hence why he wants to get this deal done to acquire the assets of BSkyB.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Jay. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Howard Kurtz, I think there was one wag who once said that after the first six pages, things in the New York Post are not necessarily untrue.
Well, a lot of people in New York, and when I was very young, delivered the New York Post, read it from the back, because that's where the sports section starts. One of the interesting things here, Neil, that also has a parallel for those of us in the States is the cozy and sometimes symbiotic relationship between the Murdoch papers in Britain and politicians. I mean, I mentioned earlier Prime Minister Cameron. He's a friend of Rebecca Brooks, who's the former editor of the News of the World and now runs the British division of Murdoch's News Corp. Prime Minister Cameron hired the former editor of News of the World, Andy Coulson, who was just arrested on Friday in this same scandal. I've watched the New York Post, and Murdoch is famous for making his views felt within his news organizations. He's certainly a hands-on activist owner. I've watched New York Post go after the Clintons relentlessly, and then when Hillary Clinton ran for the Senate in 2000, there was sort of a rapprochement, and the coverage toward Hillary turned more positive. Both Tony Blair and David Cameron sought and received the endorsement of Murdoch papers in Britain. So one of the reasons that politicians have been reluctant on both sides of the Atlantic to cross Murdoch is because the support of his papers can be very valuable. And the New York Times had a great piece yesterday about a couple of British critics of the Murdoch empire who then found themselves the object of relentless, unflattering coverage. So it can be risky to take on one of those Murdoch properties.
Well, as another critic also mentioned some years ago, the Murdoch papers do not endorse, they campaign.
They don't have to endorse.
Let's go next to this is Mustafa with us from Berkeley.
Hi, I just want to add one comment. But given that I read both the American tabloids and the European tabloids, I think the liability of what they put there, the European tabloids are like sort of detective journalistic way, in informal way, while here I find them a little bit like more serving a political party or another one by making things up. And this is what the regulations for, like, the New York Times, if you do something, they are more liable of what they put there. Well, the tabloids here, they can say that this congressman or this senator or something, they can make a lie about it, and they can cause a lot of harm for the person just to serve the other party.
Okay.
Well, in Europe, they cannot do that. There is a huge liability, and the case in point, what just happened in England. That's my point.
Okay. Mustafa's point, at least in part, Howard Kurtz, is the libel laws in Britain are very different from those here.
They are much stricter, and they cause the papers there, any media property there, to be much more cautious about what they say, particularly about public figures, whereas it's much more difficult to bring a successful libel suit, even if the facts are wrong against a public figure in the United States of America. And yet, despite that, you know, the London tabloids seem to play much more fast and loose and be racier in terms of what they publish. But they are careful when it comes to the famous people because of those very strict libel laws.
Howard Kurtz, thanks very much for your time today.
Good to talk to you.
Howard Kurtz is Washington Bureau Chief of Newsweek and The Daily Beast. You can find a link to his opinion piece on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, when gay marriage passed in New York State, supporters called that just the beginning. Opponents say that when states put it on the ballot, voters reject gay marriage every single time. We'll talk about the tactics of gay marriage state by state next Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.